Hi, this is Robert Wickens from Canada, and you're listening to F1 Weekly.
There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Steve Fall, my co-host. Nasser Hamid will be bringing us Motorsports Mondial. In the second part of the show, this is podcast number 445, July 29th, 2010. Stephen?
This F1 Weekly podcast is brought to you by Cameron Karting. Cameron Karting is proud to organize and support the 2010 Red Lion Oil Karting Championship. Check them out online at CameronKarting.com.
Thank you, Stephen. On today's program, Hungarian Grand Prix, let's get back to racing. NASA returns from Hockenheim with a goodie bag. And Motorsports Mondial will include a special interview with Michael Lewis, Formula BMW Europe driver from Los Angeles, California. Steve, welcome to the studio. How are you?
Wonderful, Mr. Rogers. And yourself?
I'm just fine getting over this team orders thing because it's really gotten way blown out of proportion.
Well, before I get fined, it's probably enough, really. You know, and I can understand... You know, I understand the driver's point of view, you know, basically those guys going, hey, well, we should get rid of this team orders thing, you know, man, nobody really cares. But as a fan, I don't want to see team orders, I want to see the damn cars race.
I understand, but it's still a team, hence team orders, and like Ross Brawn says, he understands why the fans might be disappointed by what they have seen on Sunday. The rule that bans team orders is not realistic anymore. The teams and the FIA must find together a transparent solution that maintains the integrity of the competition and safeguards the sports. Of course, Braun was at Ferrari in 2002 when Rubinho had been fast all weekend, leading the race. I like Ross Braun's style much better. Waits for the last lap to have Michael pass Rubinho, yeah. Who teared up. And it's sad because it keeps happening to a Brazilian guy.
Yeah, it's...
But you know what?
Conspiracy theories.
People need to get over it. Now, battles have been fought.
Well, frankly, I think, you know, if you're going to ban it, I think what you do is you keep the fine in place. So if you do it, you pay a penalty and and move on.
Exactly. Let's move on because most people know they exist and they will always exist. And, of course, Ross Brawn finalizes this by saying our drivers are asked to avoid clashing against each other. And if one has the chance to take the title while the other doesn't, we want both of them to act in the interest of the team. There's no I in team, Steven. Without throwing away that opportunity. So you know what? I go back to Fernando. He did the right thing. But because Fernando, you know, I mean, he's just doing his job.
Yeah.
Why was everybody on Fernando's back? And I know people on the forum, now they don't want to call him El Muy Macho Hombre de España. They want a new nickname. You know, but the guy, he was the macho one. Yeah. If Felipe had not pulled over and pissed everybody off at Ferrari and went ahead and won that race, I would have called Felipe El Man of, you know, La Mancha. I'm sure in Brazil they have a man from La Mancha. So he would have been it. And then I would have called Fernando Sancho Panza. So let's just end it all right here. And now we've got Hungary. We've got Nasser who's going to be back in the studio. He's probably going to be wearing his Pakistani outfit with bells on.
Really?
Yeah. He doesn't wear it at the airport, of course.
No.
Anyway, you know, now the front wings of Ferrari and Red Bull have been cleared by the FIA, which was last weekend. McLaren says they need to go out and copy this thing as soon as possible.
Of course.
Which is fine. See, they admit, and I like those kinds of admitting secrets. I mean, they're not secrets. You have to copy whoever's got the best wing or best diffuser.
You copy the guy at the front of the grid is what you do.
Exactly. Exactly. But anyway, McLaren has admitted that it has no idea how to do it. Apparently, they can't figure it out.
It's like the secret sauce. I'm thinking that if they're getting away with a wing that's actually flexing, what they've done is they've built the composite in such a way that it's at the point, basically, it's stiff and rigid at the point where the FIA tests it.
Yeah, well, they put weights on it.
Right, and so what you do is you make sure it's stiff to that point, and then after that, it's all over the place.
Exactly. They just spray a little water on it, and it goes. Yo,
maybe that's what it is.
That's it.
Maybe, or maybe it's airflow across it makes it softer.
I don't know. But I like it how McLaren just comes out and says, we just can't figure this thing out. So, but you know what I say? If Ferrari was able to figure it out, trust me, you'll be able to figure it out.
Yeah, McLaren should be able to figure it out.
So I thought that was really good. Are you expecting any excitement this weekend?
Hungaroring? Yeah, there might be.
Especially if there's a little moisture in the air.
If we get some more rain, yeah.
I haven't checked the weather, but we'll see. But Hungary sometimes throws up a lot of strange stuff.
Yeah, it tends to be a race that you get bizarre things going on. And you go think back to Fernando's first championship, and they were there, and the wheels are coming off. Michael Schumacher manages to steal points from Kubica. It's like because Kubica's car isn't heavy enough when he gets back to the pits. That was one of those just weird weekends. And then the whole debacle with Fernando at McLaren the first year.
It was great.
The stuff going on in the pits.
You can't make this stuff up. I mean, you can't have a good movie as good as this. So, no, I'm expecting something fun and interesting.
Yeah. Maybe there'll be Red Bull team orders or something.
Or something's going to happen. Of course, I expect maybe Renault and Robert Kubica to look pretty good.
Well, they've been so consistent all season, being basically in that 5-7 slot. And Kubica gets out there and stays there.
Now we know Ferrari's right there with Red Bull, and McLaren may have made some mistakes with their blown diffuser. And they still have to get this wing right. So McLaren, once again, is playing catch-up when we thought they had caught up. Yeah. It's very fascinating.
It's very interesting.
I just love it. Also, quickly in the news, and I know you were really concerned. You interrupted me while I was in a rant, and you told me to bring up how Monaco might possibly be dropped from the calendar. Bernie was saying that they don't pay enough. Yeah. Well, Bernie is the smartest guy in the world.
Because they ponied up more money?
Boom! 10-year contract. They had the meeting. The meeting is done. And Bernie says, yeah, we love Monaco now.
Yeah, because they're signed up. They're probably paying double what they were before.
There's money coming out of the wazoo.
Yeah.
I mean, the streets are paved in gold in Monaco. So, but I find it all very interesting, and you have to give it to Bernie. What a businessman.
He certainly is milking this sport for every dime he can get.
I love it. And we could learn from him, Steve. F1 Weekly.
He could kick down a little.
We could learn from him. F1 Weekly, one day we'll have to have a digit in front of those zeros. And if we emulate him, we might get to the promised land.
What we need to do is sell the broadcast rights for the podcast in foreign countries for millions of dollars.
Exactly. I'll be flying out to Sofia first thing in the morning. and, of course, they've confirmed the May 29th date for the 2011 Grand Prix de Monaco. See, that sounds good. It rolls off the tongue.
Yeah, I it's one of those races.
And a lot of people hate Monaco because it's just, but it's not, Monaco is not a race, it's a way of life.
And it's more about the tradition. But look at this year's race in Monaco. There was a lot of stuff going on there. Hey, if we don't have Monaco, what track does Michael Schumacher have to go to do something that flaunts the rules?
Exactly. And we love the rules being flaunted. So we'll see what happens. I'm hoping we have some good rule flaunting in Hungary. So anyway, boy, Force India just looked pitiful in Germany. I mean, they looked so good, and all of a sudden they just, it was like they walked into a big brick wall.
Or they were all just really hungover.
That's what it was.
They just got way
they got much. They got to Germany, and they started pounding those big, you know,
super steins of beer.
Yeah, super-sized steins, and yeah, you're right. They look like a bunch of belligerent drunks.
I don't know about belligerent. I think they just look like a bunch of drunks.
Yeah, I mean, they were putting the wrong tires on the wrong car on the wrong end. It was pretty bizarre.
Yeah, it was definitely one of those weekends you're going to like, we never went to Germany in 2010.
VJ Malia just says, Germany was very disappointing, but I see it as a blip on the big screen of life. Rather than anything more significant. Of course, it started very well with Adrian on P1 in the first practice. I remember that. But that was because there was that little moisture in the air.
Yeah, you just happened to have gotten the fastest lap that morning because everybody else was sliding around the track.
And of course, Liuzzi with his big spin, red flag. Which is interesting because now that Liuzzi had that big accident and we saw the tire flying across the bow of the Virgin driven by Timo Glock. You know, it's pretty scary stuff, especially since John Surtees' son was killed last year in Formula 2 with a wandering stray wheel. So apparently they're going to cut this out, and now they're going to have double tethers on each wheel. The problem is the tether's getting cut by an incident in the accident.
Yeah, it's really tough. I would be interested to know how they're doing. Basically, they're putting them on opposite sides of the tire, or how they're doing it to kind of attempt to keep them from being cut. Because if they're side by side, forget it.
Yeah, I mean, it's never going to be 100%, but I can understand it can be very dangerous. And of course, wheel tethers were made mandatory in 1999 after an enormous crash involving half the field at the start of the 1998 Belgian Grand Prix at Spa-Francorchamps, which I just happened to be at.
Yeah, well, those are, back in those days, man, you'd get a wreck and you'd have tires just zipping down the track.
Yeah, there were no tethers. They were just free and fancy.
Yeah, and I think part of the reason, too, for that is, you know, you get tires going up into the stands.
And it's happened.
Yeah. That's not good for the fans.
I agree. It's happened. We've had marshals killed in Australia from wheels flying. Yeah. It's very scary, so I'm for the double tether.
Yeah, and ultimately, even with the single tethers, it takes away a lot of the momentum that the tires have, even when they get severed, that they don't really go racing off. They usually just typically kind of are just bouncing away.
Yeah. So
it'll be nice. It'll be interesting to see the next one where we see somebody take a tire off and see how well it works.
Keep up the good work, Stephen. Maybe we'll have a raffle on who that might be.
Have a pool?
Yeah. Yeah, keep up the good work, Steve. Yes. Bernie, you know, and when he, you know, and I don't like to say this, but Bernie is right most of the time, Steve. He was right about USF1 to the bone.
He tends to, well,
he knows what's going on in Formula 1.
I think he has spies in every garage.
And of course, he just came out saying that he's not surprised if one or two Formula 1 teams will not be finishing the season.
Not finishing the season?
Correct.
Interesting.
They'll be gone by the end of the season, okay? Let me put it that way.
Yeah. That
HRT suffering because now, again, Yamamoto is going to be driving in Hungary. Well, Karun Shanduk, he gets the double shaft because it's second race in a row that he won't be driving, which is really bad without any, you know, practice time. It's terrible for these drivers.
Oh, yeah.
And obviously, Yamamoto's bring a lot of yen to the table.
He's got to be, otherwise he wouldn't be in the seat. I'm thinking that all three teams are going to make it to the end of the season. Whether or not they are there next year is probably a bigger question. But who knows? You know, Bernie's typically right. So, you know, actually, the team that I kind of think is not going to be there next year be Virgin because they're not doing so well and Branson really doesn't like to back losers.
Well, I like what Bernie says. He says, quote, "All we ever want is 10 teams. Lotus is a good name. I wouldn't want to lose them. But in general, this year has been a bit of a nuisance because it has cost money to keep these struggling teams in. It has cost a lot of money to pay for them to compete. The bottom line is they haven't really and truly given us value for being there. If suddenly these teams don't turn up at races, then I don't think the crowds will get any smaller, or the TV sets will turn off, or the newspapers will stop writing, will they? Huh! We do not care about them, these little people.
It seems interesting that he says that they cost him money. They're costing him money?
Well, you know, they have to be flown on the whole program, you know, the FedEx jets. With this little...
Yeah, well, they don't get that for free.
Well, nothing's free, Steven, but that's part of the big Bernie program.
So what's Bernie whining about? He's still getting his check cut.
Yeah, but still, I can understand his point.
Unless he's fronting the money to them to, you know, basically, you know, invoicing them and he's just not getting paid.
Well, HRT, I mean, without any of these paid drivers, they simply wouldn't be there. Period.
Yeah, well, they were pretty much, they were very nearly not there to begin with.
And what's really ridiculous is the car, when Yamamoto is in it, still shows the sponsorship that Karun Shanduk is bringing to the team.
I can't see how his sponsors are very happy about that.
Well, that's what I saw in Germany. We'll see if that gets rectified here in Hungary, but I don't know.
Well, if they don't have money to, you know, they don't have money to repaint the car. Sorry.
Keep up the good work, Steve. Quickly, the steward for this weekend's race. Okay, now we had Danny Sullivan, Indy 500 winner, drove a few Formula One races.
Mario.
Sort of shocking.
Mario.
Mario is probably pretty busy, but you know what? Mario Andretti's probably going to do a big one. You know, you're not going to find Mario Andretti in Hungary.
Yeah, actually, he'll probably go to one of the hot spots. You know, he'll be like at Singapore or Dubai, Abu Dhabi.
No, I see him doing a really big one, you know.
Like Spa?
Yes.
Spa. Oh, actually, you know what the perfect one for Mario would be? Would what? Be the Italian.
Monza. Yeah. Tifosi. Italia. T-Mortars.
Here's your T-Mortars.
Yes. What you going to say, huh? So, yeah, we'll see. Well, anyway, this weekend is it's going to be Derek Warwick. He'll be joining the stewards panel. Of course, he's... British Grand Prix driver, and of course, he raced from 1981 to 93, pretty good while for a lot of teams. Tolman, Brabham, Lotus, Arrows, Renault, and of course, my favorite part is he almost, I say almost, won the 1984 British Grand Prix, but somebody threw a horseshoe over there or something, and he, so he almost won. But he did win the Le Mans 24 Hours in 1992. And, of course, he drove in the British Touring Car Championship before co-founding the BTCC's highly successful 888 team. So there you have it. I think he's going to be a fine steward. And yeah. I hope we get a lot of excitement.
Yeah, hopefully there's something to him for him to actually, you know, get steward involved. About.
I'm sure there will be. Trust me. It's inevitable. It's inevitable.
It's hungry. It's like the full moon race of the year. You know, it's
it is. And you know, and we know that Felipe Massa is going to be totally pissed off. This is, of course, where he got hit in the face with a spring, but from not Fernando's car. It should have been Fernando's car, but it was not.
Rubinho.
It was Rubinho. So there's a lot of. I guess Massa will be meeting with the medical staff. You know, 1 year after. That helped him survive, and they'll have, you know, I don't know.
A big party.
Probably a couple of Belgian beers together or something. Yeah. It'll be good. So a lot of excitement there.
Maybe a little goulash?
Probably a little goulash, you know. and I'm really confused, but I see Fernando trying to get pole on this race.
Of course.
He's going to be on the front row. I predict it. Steve, Fernando's on a mission.
Yeah.
And Massa better stay out of his way.
But, yeah, I don't think Felipe is going to get in his way.
Anyway.
Felipe might beat him to the first corner and get it. You know, have to give up his position later in the race.
There you have it. But I expect Renault to do a good job here. Robert Kubica, of course, Petrov is fighting for his drive, as we've spoken before. This is
another
chance. Bouillet
was a little bit more even with him this past week.
Yeah, but that's a bunch of crapola. Why don't you just say you're going to sign him? Because every time I hear that, they probably sent a couple more rubles.
Well, what it probably is they got their next installment check.
Yeah, exactly. And, of course, Kimi Raikkonen is definitely out of the picture. And, you know, they say they have seven drivers waiting in the wings. They're a bunch of half-wits.
Well, they're all, you know, they're all Petrov.
Yeah, Heikki Kovalainen, come on.
Like Heikki did very well in the Renault last time.
So, yeah.
Heikki had a hard time doing well in a McLaren that was one of the best cars on the grid.
I see Petrov staying at Renault, even though they want to act as if they've got a line of people waiting to come in. None of them are any better.
Well, and Bouye may be waiting for somebody to walk up with a big check.
That's true.
Or a bigger check than they can get from Petrov.
It's very possible, and we'll see what happens. Especially if you can get a big check and performance.
That would be the best.
Yeah, wouldn't it? But that's pretty rare, so we'll see what happens. Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. We've got an outstanding Motorsports Mondial, fresh off the presses, of course, from the guru himself, who's back in Cali. He's probably stopped for a hot dog and a Busch beer on his way to the studio. So we'll be back after this brief message.
Hi, I'm Clark Rogers, host of F1Weekly.com's podcast. Please visit our website, F1Weekly.com, your fresh new destination for all your Formula One needs. F1Weekly.com brings you a weekly podcast that covers the latest news, rumors, and insightful commentary related to the pinnacle of modern motorsports, Formula One. You can find us on iTunes and other popular podcast locations. F1Weekly.com. Thank you.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the King from Karachi, Nasser Hamid.
Thank you, sir. The globe is still spinning in my head.
Good for you, Nas. Welcome back to California, the United States of America.
Thank you, sir.
I'm sure they were embracing you and hugging you at the gate.
Oh, yeah. As I've said, Homeland Security has told me I'm always a VIP. Very imported Pakistani.
Yeah.
But I'm glad to be back. Good to be home. And how are things for you, sir?
Absolutely wonderful. You know, we just had a great laugh with Felipe Massa and Fernando Alonso for the last few days, but it's finally calmed down, and now we're focused on Hungary.
Yeah, no, we have a few more laughs coming your way, right?
Excellent. I like a good little giggle.
Absolutely. Anyway, greetings and racing regards from Karachi to Cahoga Falls. Since somebody took the fall on Sunday and you've been smiling about it, we have some slings and arrows here. We start today with Motorsport Masala, a.k.a. Rage of the Race. Racing fans, and I'm one of them, we're not going to take this anymore.
It's part of racing.
I know it is. Very spicy. This masala is very spicy, and do not try this at home of podcast host. I wonder which one.
Excellent.
Yes.
Yeah, you must be talking about that BBC podcast.
Yeah, and I have some other... remind me of... a few things to tell you. Behind the scenes, some very big developments may happen soon.
Excellent.
Yeah, very good news on that front.
Good for you.
Yeah. Oh, good for F1 Weekly.
I like it, Nasser.
Si, senor. Somebody is pretending he won the German Grand Prix.
He won. I saw it.
Yeah.
The checkered flag
me
was
too.
Out.
Me too. Fair and square. You know?
This is ridiculous.
Yes, it is. He won the German Grand Prix fair and square like he danced the night away in Singapore some years ago.
What do you mean? Schumacher won fair and square in Austria in 2002?
Absolutely. And then he gave the trophy to Barrichello.
To that sad...
yeah.
To the sad Brazilian next to him.
But, you know, poor Massa cannot get a break, man. I'm beginning to feel sorry for him.
Well, my favorite...
His problem is he's too nice of a guy.
I know, exactly. And what I saw in the forum was perfect. He's been Rubened.
He's been Rubened?
Rubened.
Wow. Massa was looking forward to his first Grand Prix win since his head injury in Hungary exactly a year ago. And I think they are saying it's exactly to the day.
Correct.
Yes.
Okay. Here's a guy, young man, who delivered for Ferrari even when he had teammates who were earning $50 million a year and snoozing. And I hit the snooze button all through the two seasons. He almost won the championship in 2008 and the year before sacrificed a victory on home soil to play the game So Kimi could catch the championship thrown away by McLaren drivers. And somebody was involved in that too.
It's wonderful.
I know. You know, what goes around and comes
around. It's going to be a great movie one day.
Oh, absolutely. Starring Antonio Banderas.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. And you could play the role of his physio, whatever his name is, Marco. Yeah. It is very disappointing that Ferrari would deprive Massa of a well-deserved win, especially after he passed both the front row starters on the opening lap. That was machismo.
It was machismo.
Yeah, exactly. If a driver is setting fast, this is what I truly believe in, if a driver is setting faster times than race leader and everybody else, then the Robbie Gordon rule should apply, which in plain simple English is, if you are faster than me, pass me. At Ferrari, then this is what it's all about. At Ferrari, Nando has what Ron Dennis denied him, preferential treatment. And now we know why the cage rattling in 2007. I tell you what, Clark, you take the wins as they come.
Absolutely, especially at this level.
For sure. But if this was the last race or two races to go, I'd say, you know, you have to do these things. But, you know, so early in the season, pulling out stunts like this, now I'm convinced, and I'm sure still there is a lot more that I may never know about what happened at McLaren in 2007, but now I'm convinced what the reason was. Muy macho hombre. You know, so gentleman has posted on the forum, we need a new, this muy macho is not going to work now, and I have to agree on that.
I hate to say, sorry. I beg to differ.
Oh, I'm sure you do.
Because the problem is, Fernando did nothing wrong. He did his job, passed Felipe, because Felipe pulled over and slowed down, took a little break. But Felipe didn't have to do that. Felipe had a chance to become muy macho de Brasil.
He should have pulled out a René Arnoux of Paul Ricard in 1982.
Exactly.
And Carlos Reutemann of in Brazil.
Exactly.
Then people will know. But the thing is, you know, then he may have some clause in the contract. The check may bounce.
But is it your honor?
Or is it your championship?
Exactly. Is it the family jewels, you know, at stake? If it is, I think he should have said, no, I'm not letting him buy. You know, I don't want to be a Rubinho.
Or as Nasser says, using the Robbie Gordon thing, hey, dude, if you're faster than me, pass me.
Yeah, that's what I would have said that on the radio if I was Felipe. I would have said, you know what, Fernando, let's get it on.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, to deny him a win after he had such a bad injury and this would have been his first win, I feel terrible.
No, what I felt terrible about was the way they told, you know, that they, you know, Rob Schmedley, the way he had to tell Felipe, and that whole thing was not handled very well.
Yeah. Well, you know, having this rule, you know, it's obviously they're going to bypass. Remember some years ago, Kimi Raikkonen had to let Massa go by in the French Grand Prix, I believe it was, and then he had a cheeky smile. So this thing is never going to work. But, you know.
But it was exciting.
For you, I'm sure.
It was a lot of laughs. No, I think Fernando is whining too much. I agree. He's become the biggest whiner I've ever met in my life.
Well, excuse me? Are you Clark Rogers?
Yes.
Repeat that statement, please.
But still, I would have loved to see Felipe stand up and fight the fight.
Yeah.
It's too bad.
We need...
And I know these contracts are pretty binding at Ferrari, and I know Ferrari's a great team to drive for. And maybe it is better to finish second and keep your job.
Yeah, but, you know, poor Massa, I mean, this guy cannot get a good break.
I agree.
You know, and he's not going to win the championship this year. And
he's running out of time.
And the thing is, you know, if let's say Ferrari package turns around and it's the best package overall next year, you know, they're going to still pass it on to... See, what I don't like is it has nothing to do with Alonso or anybody. It's like, if you have a driver win races like this, then basically what you're telling the racing fans and the racing world is, this guy is not good enough to win the championship. Let me hold his hand and take him to the FIA prize-giving ceremony. Hand-holding is not for Formula One.
I agree. Yeah. And I'm with you 100%. And I wish Felipe showed some chutzpah and went against the Ferrari management. Somebody needs to stand up against, you know, Ferrari management when they do this stuff. But nobody does because you get a lot of money and you're driving for Ferrari.
Yeah, it's true. And once you get dropped by Ferrari...
Where do you go?
Yeah,
Lotus.
Exactly.
Virgin. Lotus. Yeah. Maybe Renault, but
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sorry, but Felipe is doing what he needs to be doing. He's a good number two.
And now the next race is the Hungarian Grand Prix where he had his accident.
Not only that, but that's where Fernando had a little chutzpah with that great driver from McLaren. You know, a little. So there's a lot of great stuff. This could be a great weekend.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be very good. And let's see. But Ferrari, the pace was very impressive.
And very. They have made a big leap in speed.
Oh, yeah. And let me tell you, the guy who got the shell shock, taste of his own medicine, was the guy sitting on pole. He had no idea what happened.
Oh, yeah, he was.
Yeah, he chopped all the way across to block of Fernando. Nando. And there goes Massa. That was very impressive.
It was very impressive.
So, well, let's see what happens.
Yes, it's going to be exciting. It's going to be exciting.
Yeah.
Let's continue.
Shall we?
Yes.
Let's take a quick musical interlude here.
Oh, yes. I love musical interludes.
Gracias. A little green sleeves can only mean it's time to see what Mr. Peter Brazier has up his sleeve in our segment called What Say Ye? Some facts and figures from the German Grand Prix. The win has really put Mr. Alonso up in the upper echelons of Grand Prix greats. But that's the fact, not
the
opinion.
There we go.
Yeah. We're not shy of facts. Fernando Alonso achieved Ferrari's 350th front row start on Sunday, but a Ferrari has not been on pole since the 2008 Brazilian Grand Prix, 28 races ago. I think this will change this pretty soon. And it should, for the sake of motor racing. Sebastian Vettel, homeboy, claimed his third consecutive pole, sixth of the season and 11th of his career. So doing very well, obviously. It was Red Bull's 10th pole of the season and its 15th ever, equaling Benetton at 7th. On the all-time list. So you got all sorts of history being made. Nando, this is very impressive, whether you like him or not. Nando claimed his 23rd victory, which is equaling Nelson's Piquet record, which is ninth on the all-time wins list. Very impressive. And Piquet, of course, is a three-time world champion, and Nando will get there, I'm sure. One more win, this really got my attention. One more win would tie him with Juan Manuel Fangio. Now that is, he may shed a few tears, I think. We may never see, but I think he will. Because that's a great achievement. What say you?
Oh, I think it would be fantastic. I will shed a tear.
Yeah, okay. Alonso's win in Germany was victory number 212 for Ferrari. Second most successful team with 168 victories is McLaren. And I shall never forget when Mario Andretti scored his final Grand Prix win, 1978 Dutch Grand Prix. Lotus had tied Ferrari for number of wins. It was something in the 70s, 71, 72. And look where Ferrari is now, and look where Lotus is. That's
well, seven world championships with Michael Schumacher probably stretched gap pretty quick.
That was victories wholesale, and then some. Russian guy Vitaly Petrov remains the only driver yet to out-qualify his teammate. And I hope he does well so he stays in the business.
I don't expect them to qualify this year.
Huh? I don't think so. But keep in mind, Robert has been there for a few years, and this is Tavares' first season.
Absolutely. I'm keeping an open mind.
I think he has done a better job than Nelsinho and Romain Grosjean.
I concur.
Yeah. Apart from the Ferrari situation, what was your take on the race?
I thought it was a good race. There were some good moments. I thought the watching Force India make a laughing stock out of themselves is pretty interesting.
Mr. Fahm?
Yeah, Force India's self-destruction. Not a bad race, but the one thing with Hockenheim is you end up processional just because there really are only two good places in the entire track to pass and the rest is just too damn narrow.
The thing that was a big impression on me, and I had predicted, and I do go out on a limb somewhat, that Alonso will get pole, and it was pretty close, 2,000s. 2/1000ths of a second off the.
In the last 100 races, your prediction was Nando on pole 99 times.
Yeah.
So you have to be correct.
Eventually. Right? Eventually. No, I've thrown in Robert Kubica a couple of times.
Yeah. Okay. In other racing results, some from Hockenheim, some from other places. At Hockenheim, GP2 was also in action. Pastor Maldonado from Venezuela won the race on Saturday, and which is the main event, and has a good lead in the championship. But this is his fourth season in GP2. And Sunday's sprint race was won by Sergio Perez, and he is now second in the championship. He has a chance of taking the championship, and it's getting very interesting. Two Latinos duking out for the GP2 championship. GP3, no surprise here. Winners were Robert Wickens of Canada, and this was his first win in the series. It had to happen. He's very good. And surprise, surprise, Esteban Gutierrez. Esteban Gutierrez has now won four races in GP3. And interestingly, if I'm correct, he's the only driver who has won more than one race. This guy is really making a big name for himself, and he's already under contract to Sauber. And now it was in Autosport today that they will keep him for 2011 also. Very talented kid. And he leads the championship from Wickens and Alexander Rossi. He crashed out in one of the races, and he's third in the championship. So I hope, it will be hard for Alexander to take the championship now. Wickens is like 30 points ahead of, Gutierrez is 30 points ahead of Wickens now. But hopefully Alexander can finish second or third, which will be good for his career also. IndyCars, Scott Dixon was the winner, and Castro Neves went postal. Please check it out on YouTube. You've probably seen it.
It's hilarious.
Huh?
It's great stuff. This is what I love. Yeah. Need more of this.
Yeah, yeah.
As drivers Robert. Going postal.
Yeah, of course. And MotoGP at Laguna Seca. I wish I was here because I wanted to go to this place, but it did not happen. Not too far from the palatial studios of F1 Weekly. Jorge Lorenzo was the winner. Stoner second. Stoner is moving to Honda next year. And Rossi made it to the podium in third. Very impressive. And Rossi may be on a Ducati next year, which will be very interesting. This was very sad news, but we have brought up this issue, and so it didn't come as a surprise. Brendan Hartley, the Tom Petty lookalike racer from New Zealand, very talented, has been dropped by Red Bull, which is, what do you? I mean, this will happen if you don't win a lot of races. You know, he's very good, very talented, has very good credentials. But what happened is some years ago he was Red Bull teammate to Jaime Alguersuari, and Alguersuari won the British F3, becoming the youngest winner of that championship. And this year he was lagging behind another Red Bull driver and his teammate Daniel Ricciardo in the World Series by Renault. And I was thinking about this when you get into these driver development program. It's great for you for a year or two because you don't have to pay any money. They throw all the money at you, especially with Red Bull. They put you in the best of fitness program, this and that, in Austria. But if you don't perform as per their minimum standards, which are like win every second or third race, basically, and they drop you, it's all. I'm trying to think. I cannot think of any driver who was dropped by one of these major. Driver development program and then still succeeded. It's possible, obviously, but if Red Bull drops you, why would any McLaren or Mercedes will take you unless they like you very much, which, this business is not about liking, it's about winning. Just ask Felipe Massa. Luca Montezuma likes him very much.
Oh, a lot.
Yeah, gives him good pay raises and a free Ferrari, but when time comes to win a race, what's good for the team? And another guy who has been dropped, I was looking for his name this year, Mika Maki. He's from Finland. He was also, based on previous experience and performance, very talented, very successful. He was nowhere in the results this year. And when he got signed by some team, then I read today that he's trying to resurrect his career after being dropped by Red Bull. So they can give you wings and they can clip them also. And this is It's like this with Scott Speed. They took him from Formula Renault and put him in a Formula Renault Europe and Germany. He won both those championships and threw him straight in GP2, which was quite a big jump. And but on the other hand, Dr. Helmut Marko can turn around and say, look, we made the mistake of not taking Kimi Raikkonen, and that sucker went from 23 races in Formula Renault straight to F1. So be careful what you wish for. Just might come true. Any thoughts on that? Comments on that? Smarty
not
pants
really.
Comment.
I think you're absolutely right. We'll see what happens. I mean, the problem is there's so many young, talented carters coming up the ranks that you have to keep the product moving. And you know, you've got, and if there's people that are not producing, sorry, but you're out of here. Move on. Yeah. We've got more coming up the pike.
Yeah, and you know, the thing is, a lot of these kids, you know, when you meet them, they are very nice. They are good drivers. That's why they were picked up by the program, and they were nice people, you know. And I feel very bad for them. And you know, I hate to say this, another guy who really needs to get his act together is this Italian guy, Mirko Bortolotti. I met him again this time. He was very nice to me. But his results are not coming. He's in GP3, and having raced in Formula 2, he finished like second or third in the championship, which is good, but here he's nowhere to be seen on a regular basis. So, and he's in the Ferrari driver development program. Okay, moving on to your favorite driver, Lewis Hamilton. He has been awarded the Lorenzo Bendini Trophy for efforts in the 2009 season, so I'm sure you're pleased about that.
I was very excited. Yes, one of my favorite trophies.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
Drivers.
Absolutely. And Mini in World Rally Championship in 2011, courtesy of Pro Drive and David Richards. This will be interesting. I think the new design is very nice.
I think so too. It should be exciting. If they could even compete against the Joan is another matter, but.
Well, they will, and they'll have a nice, powerful. They come in a turbo version also, right?
Right.
So it should be good. Daytona 500 winner Jamie McMurray wins Brickyard 400 at Indy, making Chip Ganassi first team owner to win these two events and Indy 500 in the same year. Very impressive for the man, for the chipster man from PA.
Must have been pretty disappointing for Uncle Monty since he was on pole.
Monty is really making big inroads into the circle world. And we'll see how it goes. You know, I've been talking.
I think he's just getting big.
Yeah.
The photo of him with his car. Dude.
You know, when I fly overseas, no matter where you're going, even if you're going back east, it's a 6-hour flight, you know, 2 hours at the airport. So you have a lot of time to read or whatever you want to do. So I always take some old magazines. And lately I've been going through a lot of old F1 racing magazines, and there's a lot of Monty in them. On the cover, why Monty is mega quick, Peter Windsor, you know, looks into his career in depth, blah, blah, blah. And look where he is now. From Monaco to Martinsville. That's what I call lapping your own career. But, you know, to each his own. Okay, looking forward to this weekend's Hungarian Grand Prix. The 2010 Hungarian Grand Prix is the 25th running of this event, which in 1986 became the first F1 race behind the Iron Curtain and featured the amazing sideways pass by Piquet on Senna. Highly, highly recommended. Punch in 1986 Hungaroring or Hungarian Grand Prix Senna Piquet and you will see it. 3 years later, Senna was again surprised by his old friend Nigel Mansell, Il Leone making a quick move to take the lead and win in his Ferrari, which is also very, you know, real fast. Whippersnapper move. Among the drivers taking part this weekend in the Hungarian Grand Prix, two of them scored their maiden wins here. Oh, look whose name comes up again. The man with the expanding bibendum, Fernando Alonso, and Jenson Button. And to make you feel even better, when Nando won his first race, he lapped Michael Schumacher.
That was exciting.
It cannot get much better than that.
No, maybe Schumacher let himself be lapped.
Really? Why? To make him look good? Or he was feeling generous that day?
Perhaps.
Yeah.
He motors.
Yeah, there you go. And one made his Grand Prix debut here in 2006, Robert Kubica, which was a very impressive performance with BMW Sauber in those days. And last year, Jaime Alguersuari became the youngest driver to start a Grand Prix at the age of 19 years and 125 days. And I remember reading his comment at the end of last year, that going to F1 with so little testing, with as was the case with him, is like going to the slaughterhouse. But he's hanging in there tough, him and Buemi. Buemi has really surprised me. Grosjean always had his number, and but Buemi has stuck in there. Heikki Kovalainen's one and only win came here in 2008, again thanks to a late race engine kablamo on board Massa's Ferrari. Poor Felipe Massa. And of course, who can forget the 2007 qualifying session, when we found out how racing drivers, I'm not taking any names, how racing drivers discuss tire strategies with their trainer while the teammate is waiting in queue. Did somebody say SMS? The proceeding was brought to you in part by a generous grant from Telefonica and Vodafone. What say you? Are you still on the line?
Yeah, I'll text you after the program.
Well, I'm sure you will. Okay, you know, every now and then I'm trying to research some story, and when you're Googling and yodeling or whatever you're doing on the web, you look for one thing, something else pops up, which may have some, you know, relevance to the search you have. So I get this, what I am calling it, blast from the past. Amazing, but true. This I could not believe. This one is from New Zealand, okay, and is too much. And this is taken from a September 2000 story in the in a local New Zealand newspaper on the web. And I think the action took place a couple of years earlier in 2008, was when the case was High Court of New Zealand made a ruling. Okay. A racing driver by the name of Jayan Singh of Wellington was looking for sponsors for his career. And this is true, I'm not making this up. He thought approaching Brinks would be a good idea. Problem is, instead of using Microsoft PowerPoint, he pointed a gun and a knife at the security guards before taking off with $190,000 in two separate incidents. And this was, you know, to go motor racing. Adding insult to injury, he put Pinkerton decals on his race car. That's really hitting below the belt. And I just wonder if he sent sponsorship proposals from behind bars to Bad Boys Bail Bond. Can you imagine stealing money at gunpoint to go motor racing?
It's pretty pathetic.
Yeah, selling drugs to go motor racing has been done with success, and actually with championship success, and at one time even put three brothers in the Indy 500. And I tell you what, when this happened, when the three Whittington brothers qualified for Indy, I was back home in those days, and I was looking at the result, and I remember saying to my brother, you know, how proud the parents must be, only to find the bambinos to go to jail. Oh boy, so that's a little bit jet lag version of the Motorsports Mondial. Do we have a few extra minutes?
We do have a few extra minutes. How was Hockenheim? How was the track? How was Amanda Hunt?
Amanda Hunt was very nice and very cooperative, and I thank her again for allowing us access. And the trip was, you know, it's just like a jam-packed trip. I was coming back and had a couple of days, you know, sort of a pit stop. So made a detour to... Also, my thanks to Mr. Peter Nygaard of Grand Prix Photo. You know, he's a gentleman. I use his photos in my calendar. So what I do is, again, we were staying in the same... This time we were staying in the same hotel. So I would commute to the track with him, and his car can go straight into the parking lot. So that makes life very convenient. So, and talking of Peter Nygaard, you know, there is this thing called, it's called, this website, you know, GrandPrix.com, which is run by Mark Karp from New York, and Joe Saber of England, who lives in Paris now. They came out with, and GrandPrix.com, by the way, is the official supplier of data to F1 website, Formula1.com. So these are pretty heavy-duty people. And the very same people were doing a magazine called GrandPrixPlus.com, which is subscription, $25, $30, something. And Mr. Nygaard was telling me that he has now joined forces with them and is going to supply photographs to them. So we are talking behind the scenes now. We are texting each other now, Peter and myself, on trying to work something out where we can do some cross-promotion. As you know, Joe Saber is also involved on another podcast, which is not BBC. So hopefully there won't be any conflict of interest. I mean, we're not trying to slit any throats here. You know, we're big, one happy podcast familia. But hopefully, you know, we'll try to work something out where we can do some cross-promotion for F1 Weekly. Saison 73's beautiful historical calendar. And everybody will be happy.
That would be great. Maybe we could even share interviews from one podcast to another.
Yeah.
What a thought, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. We have, yeah, yeah. We
I'm
have
a
no
generous
problem.
Guy.
Oh, I know. I know. Yeah. You make the team orders, right?
Thank you.
Yeah.
And just call me Luca.
Yeah. And also another thing, you know, I was talking to, you know, I now go there every, people see me every 4 or 5 months or whatever. So there are some drivers and they're entourage, meaning mama, papa, who are also the sponsor at this stage. So I was talking to a couple of papitos, and one of them asked me, you know, to send him some information because his kid is, this is his maiden year in racing. He says, I don't want my son for 4 or 5 months. No. Actually, you know, between the season ends for him in September, and then it won't, the new season will not start till like April or May. He said, I definitely want my son to do some racing in winter time. And so he said, send me some information about motorsports activities in the U.S. There are some, you know.
Other formulas.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, there's Skip Barber series and the Jim Russell series. So, which is good that, you know, people are approaching me and asking for some advice or suggestions. So we'll see what we can do for. It's not easy, but one of these days I'm going to ask. Some of the drivers, you know, we're talking junior level, not GP2. Maybe if they can put a F1 Weekly sticker on their car for.
I was hoping you'd already done that, but.
No, you know, yeah.
Takes time.
Well, you know, no, it doesn't take time. It takes how much?
Yeah.
It's all money, Clark Rogers.
Just show them that beautiful picture you carry in your wallet of moi.
Yeah. Yeah, but then they ask me, are you from San Francisco? So, you know, it gets complicated.
Yeah, that does get complicated.
So we'll keep it just between you and me.
Okay, thank you, Nasser. Thank you for another outstanding Motorsports Mondial. Welcome back to America. Now, quickly, will you introduce our interview?
Michael Lewis is a young dude, happening dude from Southern California.
Well, you are back, dude, huh?
Yeah.
Going right back to the lingo.
Yeah, absolutely. You got to go with the flow, you know. And anyway, he did karting here, did very well, and a big fan of, obviously, road racing. And what really caught my attention, his helmet design is the same as Riccardo Patrese's design, which is one of my all-time favorite designs, because it's very simple, blue and white, dark blue and white, looks very nice. And I'm at this interview we're playing was recorded in Barcelona. I met him again, and things are going good for him. You know, he's happy that he's moving up the timesheets and all that. So I thank him for his time in Barcelona, in Hockenheim, and hope people enjoy the conversation.
Nas, thank you very much.
Okay, folks, I'm here with the only American in Formula BMW Euro, and gentleman is from Southern California, so the best way to welcome him is, hey, dude, what's up?
How's it going? Yes, from Southern California, very far away from the moment in Spain. So, California is where I'm from.
Okay, and we are talking with Michael Lewis. Michael, good to meet you here, and I'm glad you're representing America. You know, first thing I noticed while you were doing some cash dealing with your bell wrap, your helmet design is very much like the design of Riccardo Patrese. Tell me a little bit about the helmet design.
Okay, for my helmet design, I was in karting in 2005 and 6, and I was never really had an idea. Paint job for my, you know, I say image or whatever. I wanted to have a symbol for me, and I was looking around and I saw a driver with these nice blue lines on the side of his helmet. I kind of like this. So from my first helmet, I put these blue lines on my helmet. From there, it's been transformed to what it is now, with these blue lines and pinstriping. But it's been so, only Evan looked at Patrese's helmet or anything, just kind of developed on its own,
yeah,
per se. But it's been these lines, however you describe, yeah, them, been kind of what I've been known as, I guess, with this symbol. So
yeah, that's Patrese's design, and that's what I noticed. I like that design always.
Yeah, I like it. Yeah.
And if you put your name Lewis here on the front, then you're totally like him. Good. He may ask for some royalties though. Okay, first.
No.
No.
We'll just keep it. The Lewis is better.
Okay.
Now, Michael Lewis is from SoCal. How did he get develop an interest in racing so far away and not into the, you know, exactly, the round and round world of NASCAR racing?
A lot of people ask me this question because the most common thing from U.S. or even California is to go in left turns only. Yeah. I started with karting, like I said earlier, and I've been kind of on the road course mentality. Yes, I've been you know, influenced with the oval things quite a lot. I've actually driven some. It's quite fun. But for me, I've been always for the road course and just kind of been developed in that. I've raced in Europe quite a lot with WSK and with the good man Dino Chiesa with Zanardi Go-Karts, and he's taught me a lot, and I really liked the, you know, whole road course style of things, and just kept progressing in Formula BMW. It was a result, we went in the U.S. first. We didn't come directly to Europe. We were in the U.S., raced a year of Formula BMW in the U.S., and then we decided to come over here because I was rookie champion in the U.S., so I earned a scholarship to come over to Europe for this year. So for me, I just kind of always liked road courses, I guess.
And what is the interest in motorsports coming from, as you know, a lot of stuff to do in SoCal?
Yeah, okay, there's many surfing, many of this, many of that, but my family's been in racing since day one. My father, he owns some race teams for oval circuits. He also publishes a racing magazine, and my mother is very, very supportive as well. So from the early age, I was always around racing, watching it, listening, and I just liked it a lot. So, I mean, I would see my friends surfing, but I would go to a race. So, just for me, it's been natural.
See, I can tell you're not a NASCAR driver because you did not even mention your dad's racing magazine. So, here's your chance.
No, it's called Performance Racing Industry, and they published this magazine regarding marketing issues of racing, all about racing and the marketing and stuff. So, you know, it's been going quite well, I guess, but that's kind of where this background of racing came from, and I was thrown into it through this magazine, I guess.
Great, you got to keep the sponsor's name out there. Okay, how long were you in karting, and what were your big achievements in karting in your... let's talk first karting in the U.S. first.
Okay, karting in the U.S., I was champion in the peak of my year. Champion in IKF Region 7 in California. It's quite a strong championship with Mike Manning karting. He's a good man, Mike Manning. And, you know, he's been helping me a lot from the early days of karting. So I won this championship, won many big races, and then also apart. Although I didn't win many in much strong races in Europe, European circuit also developed my racing, my skills, and everything just to become better. So in the U.S., you know, won karting championship. Went to BMWs, won the rookie championship, so maybe this year there's something good happening. I just got to focus and we'll see what happens. So,
now, when you did some racing in Europe, also in karting, like you said, with Dino Chiesa, yeah, did you find much difference in the depth of talent between the U.S. scene and here?
Yeah, there's good drivers in both places. However, in Europe, when you race, every driver from first place to 80th place or whatever is extremely good. The same in this BMW category. I mean, every driver is very good. In the U.S., there are many drivers that are equally as good as in Europe. However, the depth of field at every race, the consistency of all the good drivers is amazing in terms of all the time there's good people you're racing with. So the competition was always really high, and you had to fight like crazy for every position ever. So, yeah, like, of course, the competition in Europe was a bit different, but it was very strong compared to the U.S.
Well, you have to fight for your right to party and win also, which is true. Yeah. Now, when you decided to go Formula BMW in the U.S., I understand it's a pretty expensive series. Did you look at other series, single like Formula Ford or something else?
Okay, so what we were kind of thinking, you know, we're looking around to try to go in the best Formula car series possible. We've started growling sponsor groups behind me, and because we can't, you know, it's impossible, somebody can't just go into any ride they want. So we started rallying sponsor people behind me, and quite a lot of people, like, for example, this year, K&N air filters, C-Tech cabinets, iBox springs, all these people helping us. It was the same in the U.S. So we were looking, you know, at Formula Ford, at Formula whatever, but BMW came up. We knew Dino as well, and he made a few phone calls to some people, and we kind of were actually talking to other teams, and we got a test ride with Euro International, just a one-off test through a bunch of different contacts just to get, you know, a seat time to see how we liked it. And from the first test, the team liked us. I liked the car. Everybody was happy. We all liked everything. And the sponsors were happy with this car, and we kind of just went in the direction of Formula BMW. It's kind of natural as well.
Now, going from karting to a single-seater, what was the biggest adjustment challenge, or what was the biggest frustration for you in trying to come to grips with the new vehicle?
It's something new. Okay, so when you first go from this karting to something new, of course, it's something new, so you must learn like crazy to try this new vehicle. It's much heavier. You're going much faster. Okay, of course you're not changing direction as quick as a go-kart. In go-karts, everything happens like very fast. And these formula cars, it's kind of a different perspective on terms of how you enter the corner, how you rotate the car, all of this. It's a bit different. But it takes some time to get used to, and this my second year with the International, my first year with this team has been very helpful because they were really supportive on how to approach the whole car. So it's just in terms of the difference, it's just bigger, faster, and you've got to handle the weights and the low power as best as you can. It's a bit different from the cars.
Since this is your second year in the same car, you're pretty much one and the same with the vehicle. In terms of competition, who do you see as your main challengers?
Yeah, I mean, there's just many guys. My teammates are both very strong. Carlos Sainz Jr., even though he's a rookie, he's quite strong. And I mean, there's three or four teams that are quite good. Fortec has a good bunch, as well as Kaufman. So, really, one guy, no. There's about four or five different guys from different teams, including my own, that are very strong, and we're all going for the same position, which is first. So,
realistically, what would make you happy? Obviously, everybody wants to win, but during this end of the season, if you don't win, what place would you like to be that you'll say, you know, I did a good job?
For me personally, I would love to be on the top three. Be amazing. Realistically, maybe fifth would be the minimum, but top three would be like amazing. Whether that's first, everybody would like this. Second as well, but I want to be on podium, and even for the race as well. So podium, whether that's third, second, or first, try to make that as much as possible.
Yeah, you know, one good thing, another good thing here is that in Barcelona for the first European leg of the F1 race, we have you, who, and you've done very well. We have Alexander Rossi in GP3, and also Joseph Newgarden, three American drivers who are very good. So that's very good. Do you guys hang out together or chill out together, as they say in Cali?
Quite honestly, it's been strange. Like, I think Joseph has ran much stuff in the Midwest, and he's all over the place doing his thing. Same with me, I'm all over the place testing. Rossi as well. So quite honestly, I haven't really had much time with these guys. I haven't really, you know, I mean, I've said once or twice at the track high, just like anybody else, but everybody is so much into their sport and doing their own training programs, doing their own family, that everybody's almost all over the place. I think I've raced once or twice in the go-kart with Newgarden, but Rossi, never raced really against him. But in terms of hanging out, we're all over the place so much. It's hard. It's hard to do that, but
no, I totally understand that. Okay, who is guiding and managing your career at this time? You look like a pretty smart guy. Are you doing it all on your own?
No, okay. It takes a great lot of work with my family, myself, my team owner Antonio Ferrari is a very nice and smart man, engineer as well. So I mean, my father is very instrumental in terms of, you know, what we're trying to look at. My team owner as well. So it's kind of been a collective effort with the team we're with and my father as well. And everybody's been trying to, you know, put ideas together, try to direct kind of how everything's going. So exactly.
Okay, how about telling our listeners, we have listeners all over the world, a little bit about Michael Lewis, the young man, the dude from SoCal. You're interested in music, sports, what you like, and do you like jalapeno with your burritos?
Oh, burritos are amazing. It's probably one of my most favorite food from the culture of Mexico.
Because, you know, with or without jalapenos?
Throw as much jalapenos as you want on there, I'll take it. No, I love it.
Bueno, hombre.
Mucho, mucho bueno. Italian and Spanish mix. No, okay, I love Mexican food, love Italian food. I speak somewhat Italian, Spanish mix, kind of together. People can understand me if we're close. I grew up in a town of, you know, surfing and all this, so you have to love, you know, surfing and skateboarding, so which I know quite well. For me, you know, racing is my passion. I go to school right now. I'm in university, so I'm doing both. It's a bit intense, but racing is, you know, my heart as well. So, I mean, I guess I just like to go fast, and I'm from California, so.
Great. What are you going to school and what are you studying?
Oh, okay, so school. I go to Cal State Fullerton. It's a university in Southern California. I'm studying business at the moment. So I'm in this field of business just to see how it works. I'm racing full time because that's my passion, and in the business thing, I just, you know, something to keep my brain active. A lot of people say, oh, okay, a lot of times if you do both, it's, you're not focused on both. No, for me, I look at it as like I'm doing two things, just trying to keep myself active. So that's how I look at it.
And do you plan to move to Europe during the racing season, or do you plan to operate from there?
Actually, I'm living in Europe right now. So I live in a little town called Montana Lucino, about 10 minutes from Lake Como, which is a very nice area. So I've done, you know, a few walks or bus rides into Como. If you'd like, you can come with me. It's very nice.
I'm welcome.
Yeah.
You're the first traveler who has invited me.
Yes, you're welcome. It's amazing. We can go
Grazie.
Along the lake.
Grazie, señor.
Niente. So it's very nice. So we leave maybe 10 minutes from Como with a nice family. who we know very well. And yeah, I've been living here because it's very hard to go from the U.S. back and forth. Very hard. Yeah. I mean, because you lose time, you must test all the time. So to come back and forth is too difficult. So I just stayed here in Italy. It's much better.
Are you planning to learn the Italian language also?
Yeah, I understand it 100%. Like if somebody speaks to me, I can understand almost 99%. So it's there. But in terms of speaking, I kind of use this Spanish kind of chicken Spanish Italian mix per se. So I would like to learn formally the language because I've never actually sat down and formally learned it. But it's a nice language. I can understand everything. So it's nice to know this language because you live in Italy and you just need to understand everything. So yeah, I'd like to learn it though, full on. Maybe I do this.
Cali chicks or Italian chicas?
I don't know, man. That's like maybe if they're nice, Italian or no difference. As long as they're nice and they're cool, whatever. Anywhere, Italian, English, whatever.
Very good. Very diversified. Yes. Okay. Finally, how about a message to listeners of F1 Weekly, please?
F1 Weekly is a great site. Listen to it as much as possible. I love it. Thank you for the interview. Okay. Take care.
Thank you very much, man. No problem. I really appreciate that.
Yeah.
Michael Lewis, thanks for joining F1Weekly.com. And now let's go right to the wrap-up with the forum updates.
Forum updates from Yay! Thanks, Peter. Happy birthday, Mayonnaise. You won't believe how busy it's been on the forum since the team orders debacle at the German Grand Prix. It broke the most users online record of 99 by hitting 107 on the 25th. The great thing is everybody has an opinion on it, and we are willing to share it. A poll, 45% said we should have team orders, 33% said no, we should not, and 22% said, yeah, well, sort of. Koala has extended his lead in the predictions competition despite Weber's poor performance in Germany. Tricky says he's cheating. Kimmich scored a record low after not picking either of the Ferraris. Tricky Dicky would also like to be known as a numb toe. Skype text IM chat has been quite active during the races with no one outside Europe joining in for the last race. If you'd like to chat or join in on text, check the forum. That's all we have for now, folks. Don't forget to post pictures of you or even better, your hot wife or girlfriend wearing an F1 Weekly hat.
That's beautiful, Stephen. Yes, we do have hats for sale.
Yes.
And they're on the merchandise page.
And they look really good on hot women.
Yes, they are snappy.
They look good on, you know, fat, lazy old men, too, but better on hot women.
If you're an F1 Weekly listener, you're an attractive man,
period.
Yeah. Thank you very much. Quickly, I got a quick email from Jose Ramon de España. And this one is pretty interesting. Of course, there's a little bit of broken English in here, but it's interesting. Alonso, everybody's agree, he is the best driver. In F1, from many years ago, I've seen him racing in karting in Europe when he was a kid, and it was something amazing. But now, McLaren have invested a lot of money years ago, and F1 politics says that McLaren must win at all costs. F1 is not a sport. It is a boring business where you need to invest a lot of money, and the Eccleston organization will take care of you for winning. That's the way Ferrari won 5 championships with the unpresentable Schumacher. Regards, Jose Ramon. Well, there you have it. A lot of people don't like Formula One. They're sort of...
Jose's a little bitter.
Yeah, a lot of people are bitter deep down inside in the gut. So anyway, that's the way it is. Quickly, I want to remind everybody about the San Francisco Formula One group, also known as SFF1.com. Go to their website, check them out. They always have group get-togethers, activities, bars and grills, and they also do a lot of meets up at indoor karting tracks. So if you're on the peninsula or in San Francisco, check out SFF1.com. Cameron Karting is proud to organize and support the 2010 Redline Oil Karting Championship. Cameron Karting offers CRG carts, engines, and parts for all carts, engine service, driver coaching, and trackside support to Northern California carters. For more information, contact CameronKarting.com. That's CameronKarting.com. I want to mention our MySpace and Facebook, of course, Twitter as well. Just go to those sites, do a search for F1 Weekly, and add us as a friend. If you'd like to advertise or cross-promote with our website or podcast, email us at info@f1weekly.com. And if you buy a hat, email me a picture of you wearing the hat, and we'll put that on the front page. Then you could do a screen capture and make it your wallpaper.
There you go.
It doesn't get better
than
that.
Or send it to your family and friends. And
exactly.
You know, let them know what a Formula One geek you really are.
Exactly. From everyone here at the F1 Weekly Palatial Studios, good night.
Good night.
This is Desiree for F1Weekly.com, thanking you, the subscribers and members of our listening audience, for listening to our podcast, reporting and commenting on Formula One, the highest echelon of motorsport, a blend of technology, tradition, glamour, and guts, all wrapped up in a high-speed package. That's F1Weekly.com for all your Formula One needs.